You're listening to the Bold True Life podcast with Hana and Maimuna. We're sisters, life coaches, and we have honest conversations about what it takes to blaze your own trail in life.
This means we'll be talking about the triumphs and the struggles of showing up to our lives with authenticity, courage, and mindfulness. We hope you enjoy the episode.
And today we have a special guest with us, our friend Jamie Imani. Hi, Imani.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here. So Jamie Imani is a life coach for professional women, one of the only Muslims who's certified in Brené Brown's work and facilitates workshops to teach her material. And you've even done workshops for the World Bank. You do it for churches and mosques. And now your new endeavor is taking over the world with YouTube. That's what you're doing. I want to get into this YouTube thing. What was it like preparing for YouTubing? What was that like when you first started?
You know, for me, it was actually really hard because I was never part of the selfie culture. I don't know if it's because I'm older. So I just never took any pictures. I never did anything like that. And I was never on social media either. Like, I never posted anything. So for me to go from never posting a picture to seeing myself on camera, it took a lot. It took a lot out of me. And so I spent 6 months just recording myself and watching myself and getting used to looking at myself, which is always so cringe. You know, It's such a cringe experience, an experience that just makes you really feel awkward. So it was hard. And I just kept trying to tell myself, you know what, like, what I'm trying to deliver is more important than how I feel about myself. Just had to be secondary to the value that I had and what I wanted to share. And it was just the next step on my growth, because you know what, I teach vulnerability, I teach courage, and I just felt like that was the next step that I need to take in order to practice what I preach.
Talking your talk.
Well, yeah, you have to, otherwise you don't even know what people are going through, and that means you're not very helpful because you're not feeling it from the inside.
Right.
So yeah.
So Imani, what is it like now for you?
What is it like now for me? You know, at the beginning, I was so scared of negative comments, and I didn't realize that what's worse than negative comments is actually no comments at all, like being completely ignored and no attention. It takes 15 hours to make a 4-minute video. It's a lot of work because it's based on so much. Based on so much research, and you know, we're very careful in what we put out there, and it's thought through. And, you know, so you do all that work, you want someone to see it. And at the beginning, nobody was even watching it. So just getting over that, the vulnerability of putting yourself out there and not even deserving a negative comment, you know, like, people didn't care enough to watch it, let alone a negative comment, you know. So I didn't expect that. I really didn't see that one coming. I prepared so much for negative comments. Now that it's growing bigger and I am getting those negative comments, if it's part of my insecurity, then it hurts me. But if it's something that I'm not insecure about, then it doesn't hurt me. You know what I mean? That's usually what it comes down to. Being a YouTuber is much harder than I ever thought it would be.
Of all the things in Brené Brown that we talked about, I'm sorry, Hana, I'm jumping in. I wanted to kind of continue on this question. Of all the things that you learned from her, what would you say really helped you in the YouTube process?
I think the vulnerability piece, that vulnerability is courage. You know, the definition of vulnerability that we have is uncertainty, taking a risk, and emotional exposure. And so that's exactly what I'm doing. But then growing up, I was taught that vulnerability was weakness, especially when you are a child of an immigrant. You play it safe. You learn to become a doctor. You take safe jobs. And I've always been in these funky, creative spaces, you know. Yeah. It's very risky. And so she gave words to what we were doing, which was that you're carving out these paths in your career that really aren't common, not necessarily many people have done. And so naturally, it's just going to be really hard. And so her just labeling that type of courage helps me at least be able to stick through it, you know. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like just watching Brené Brown's career, even though I haven't experienced it, but just watching her experience it gives me a voice to understand what I'm feeling, which helps me continue.
Mm.
You know, so just because she keeps doing things that other people haven't done, that are scary, that she has no idea what the outcomes are going to be. Mm-hmm. Just watching her life, you know, the vulnerable life of showing up and doing things that you're not even sure if it's going to be successful or not. Yeah, so definitely the biggest piece is the uncertainty of doing something that you believe in and knowing that that is the only way to do it.
Interesting.
All right. So this is a question about your content, which is mental health. You've been speaking about it for a while now, and I'm curious, what's your experience been like sharing this work with the Muslim community, where it's sometimes somewhat of a taboo topic?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because I think if you asked me that question 5 years ago, I would have had a much different answer. I think when I started 10 years ago, it really was very difficult because people didn't understand what it was. They just thought that I was working with crazy people. And so they say things like, aren't you going to become crazy as well? You know,
if you keep working,
you know, like that type of stuff. And now people are much more open. I don't think it is as taboo as it used to be. But now the way that it's spoken about, and I spoke about in one of my videos, in the suicide video that I made, that's the first one that started to become more popular. In that one, I was talking about how the way we speak about mental illness, I don't necessarily agree with. It's kind of like the mentally ill over there. You know, it's almost like we feel sorry for them. And I just think that's disrespectful. So personally, I think it's...
I just want to cut you off here. So how should we speak about mental health? Like, continue that thought, because that was a really good point.
Yeah, I think not recognizing it as the other, because we went from not talking about it, but kind of being really scared that it might just happen to us. Like, I've heard people say things like, oh, mental health is something just suddenly happens to you, like a disease that you can suddenly catch. You know, like it just came out of nowhere. And it's like, no, your circumstances affect your mental health, your situation, your home life. It's more real. It's more personal than you think it is. It's not this thing over there, these people over there that need help. Right. You know,
right.
Mental health is, we all have some sort of mental health issues. We're all on this spectrum. And so just me too. So the conversation should be me too. You know, so
one of the things that we talked about in our last podcast, Hannah, you mentioned that Imani inspired you to become a life coach. And I'm wondering if there is a difference in life coaching versus therapy with that same topic.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, my background is in counseling. That's where I started off. And I did find that coaching, number one, was just more, it was more of that Me Too culture, where I felt like whatever I was learning, I can directly apply it to my own life. And it wasn't a patient, patient client, doctor type of relationship, where it, sometimes it feels like they were your therapy. And I didn't want that, because I went into coaching to help myself. You know, I felt like, growing up, the thing that I was missing, that was messing up my own life, was the fact that I didn't understand my own mental health. And so I literally went in to save myself. That is still where the reason why I do YouTube, the reason why I do everything that I do, is because, you know, I believe it's my responsibility to be the best person that I can be. And this whole process is teaching me that. And so, yeah, so the Me Too thing is one of the most important values that I have when it comes to psychology. I do not want to come across as a professor. And I also do think that culturally, it's very different. It's we're just more vulnerable as a culture. You know, we're all into oversharing. You know, we are way more free than we used to be in the generations before us. So I think it's a cultural shift as well. And it's not just a life coaching therapy thing.
Which brings us to our boundary question. I was going to ask you, because vulnerability really needs, something I learned from you is that it really is protected with good boundaries. And so I was going to ask you, what are your personal boundaries that you put on, placed on yourself? And then what are some of the boundaries that you put on other people? And maybe in the context of YouTube, as we're talking about YouTubing now.
Yes, boundaries is, oh my God, it is a lifesaver. When I first got into YouTube, I didn't realize how much the numbers would impact me. You know, like YouTube is a numbers game. It just is. And I work really hard not to be defined by those numbers personally in my own mind, you know, because you just obsess over the numbers, you know, and the numbers don't even equate, because I have no idea how much I'm helping people. Like, I put this work out there and I'm somehow, what I'm trying to do by looking at numbers is trying to figure out how much impact I have. And so I had to really figure out boundaries for myself to protect myself from obsessing over the numbers. So I started making sure that I don't get on my phone. You know what I mean? After a certain time, I don't respond to everybody's comments. Now that a lot of people are reaching out to me for help, I'm very clear on how many people that I can help per day. You know, I'm human. Like, obviously, it's just a human thing to feel so bad when somebody sends you a question and you can't give it your all. So you answer questions best that you can, but you are bounded by the time that you have. You know, and I want to give my best answer and help them so much, but I was just getting so drained, and I had to just accept that, yeah, I can't, with the time that I have been given, I can't help people as much as I would like to help people, especially when it comes to one-on-one. I just can't do it. That boundaries is just, you know, Brené Brown says, there's no empathy without boundaries. Then, it, you know, just becomes resentment. There's no vulnerability without boundaries. Then it just becomes you oversharing and, you know, wanting to be liked. It's like, without boundaries, you can't sustain anything that you are doing. And I really just had to learn that the hard way. And it's a constant battle. Trying to stick to my boundaries is a constant battle, because it's not like once you have the courage to profess what your boundaries are, people respect it. They don't. They become rude to you. They don't understand why you can't spend an extra 10 minutes with them. They don't understand, you know, why you can't just pick up the phone, you know. And it's like, I just can't, because if I pick up the phone, then, you know, while I'm talking to my child, I'm not giving my child the attention that she deserves from me. And so you're constantly fighting between values, and the only way you can do that is by having boundaries and cutting something else off. So, yeah.
Interesting. You're one of the most thoughtful people around your time and your energy. And it's been really interesting watching you.
Thank you. You know, but it's been really hard too, because all people, everybody that's close to me knows that she may or may not do what I ask her to do. Like, you know, like, I'm not this nice girl. I'm not this nice girl who's going to be like, yeah, sure.
You know? Right.
Basically, you're no longer nice. When you have boundaries, you're no longer that nice girl that says yes to everything. And that's hard.
Right.
That's hard. But I just, you know, after being people fooling me around by being nice, I just don't want that. But at least I'm not misleading you. And so you choose that over being liked.
What way would you say are people misleading other people by not having boundaries? What do you mean by that?
Like, you know, when somebody asks you to do something and you say yes, and then you come home, like when, you know, like baking cakes, the school asks me to bake lots of cakes or something like that. Say, you know, your kid's school. And then you say, yeah, of course I'll do it. And then you come home and then you're cussing the school out. You're cussing the teacher out. And then your kids are watching you. And then now your kids aren't sure if they like, you know, the teacher anymore, because of the resentment that that you are feeling because you didn't say no, because you don't have time, you know. So it really messes up relationships as well. And then you also, when you do more than you can, it comes with a feeling of resentment and dislike, and that energy, the other person feels it. And so the relationship is really important to me. So I'd rather say I can't do it so I can maintain relationships with people that are more pure. And that is hard. That is hard. So, yeah.
I guess since we were talking about boundaries, Imani, and you mentioned how, you know, boundaries are basically self-care for you. And that's one of my favorite topics personally. So I'm curious, what else do you do to take care of yourself as you're doing this very public work on YouTube and having people reaching out to you, aside from sometimes having to say no or, you know, giving people?
Yeah, honestly, that's like one of my favorite questions as well. I've become I've become so strict about the self-care stuff, like going to the mosque every day. It has become my sanctuary to pray. What else? Going to the gym once a day, and just things like that take up so much time, you know. And at the beginning, I used to think to myself, oh, about the hour and a half that you just took going to the mosque and, you know, going to the gym, you could have helped somebody that actually responded to you. But when I think about it, I really couldn't have. You know, it's really interesting. I never thought this, but what the YouTube channel is doing is just, it's really making me more spiritual, because I just feel so, what's the word? There's so much uncertainty. I don't know if it's impacting people. I don't know how it's helping people, or if it is, or if they're watching it or they're not. I have very little certainty with the numbers and in every sort of way. And it's free too, right? And so what the boundaries are doing, by having sort of spiritual boundaries where I take that time to just be like, oh, just speak to God and be like, listen, I don't know what I'm doing. It just feels right. And so that's what I'm doing it. I've taken so seriously, just taking care of myself in this super uncertain world of YouTube, where the algorithms change all the time. And it's just, I mean, you just have no control if, you know, like one video can have 100,000, the next one just has 6,000. You're just like, huh, what? Like, you know, I don't understand what happened. So just taking care of number one, having a coach as well, like Mamona, you're my coach. So having a coach, going to the gym and praying, those are, I make time for that no matter what. I just can't do it otherwise. I can't help people unless I really help myself.
Yeah, we coach each other.
So yes, we coach each other. That has been so, so impactful. You know, you can't sell what you don't believe in, you know, and I wouldn't be a coach unless I had a coach myself. You know what I mean? Because it's that, this is how much it changes your life.
I want to follow up with that, because you touched on something and you said the YouTube channel is making you more spiritual. Yeah. A lot of times people associate YouTube with being narcissistic, almost.
Yeah,
obsessed with yourself. I'm sure you've gotten these comments somewhere, or at least that vibe, that energy. Oh, she's got a YouTube channel now, and it's like, oh, you know, they feel like you think, look at me now, kind of thing. Yeah, I just wanted to hear what you had to say about that.
Yeah, honestly, to be honest, that's what I used to think about YouTubers too. Like, not that long ago. You know, I used to be like, oh, it's just, you know, these are people who really want attention for themselves. And you know, now I really respect those YouTubers. Like, oh my God, the amount of vulnerability that it takes to keep putting your face out there like that on topics that you really believe in from your heart. There is no way to go. It just feel like there's no way to go but God to help kind of guide you through this super mucky, unclear path that you are taking. You know, and it's like, I think there was a hadith like that where about how business makes you more spiritual, because then I remember my grandfather told me that, and I don't know where it's from, but he used to tell me that business makes you more spiritual because your income is always going up and down, you know, and so you're no longer relying on that stable paycheck. So you just, yeah, it's made me turn to God more than I ever have had. Because number one, I just don't know what comes next and if it's working, where I'm going. And secondly, I just have to keep praying that it's working. You know, I have to pray to him to help me through this process. You know, like, it's just, it's such a spiritual process. And even though it's supposedly a narcissistic world, but yeah, I don't think these YouTubers are as narcissistic as we think.
Yeah, I think some of them really are.
And then the worth piece too. Am I going to have my worth defined by those numbers, or am I going to have my worth defined by something greater than that? And so that's another reason why I have to sort of run to spirituality more. And this is where people get annoyed too, because they're like, oh, aren't you a hijabi? if she's making you so spiritual, you know? Like, you know, that's why I don't even, like, I'm talking about it here. But yeah, that's why I don't even talk about the spirituality piece. Like, the religion and spirituality is a big part of my life, but I almost feel like I can't go into it because I'm not a hijabi. And people do make comments about that. You know, they'd write things like, oh, nudge, nudge, where's your hijab? And, you know, recently. So the YouTube success has been very quite recent for me. You know, it's only like a month or two that it's really taken off. And so recently, that's what it's been.
That you're
like.
Getting that those comments.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't.
Do you want to use this opportunity to address?
Do I want to go there?
The shade.
Address the shade with the hijab shade.
Yeah.
That people, I don't even know what to say about it. I honestly don't know what to say. You know, I was a hijabi for 5-6 years, and I was that. And I, you know, I was, you know, not that all hijabis are judgmental, like you guys, obviously you're not, but I was judgmental. As a hijabi, this is a very sensitive thing.
Okay.
So wait. Okay. Do I want to address that? I'm not sure. I don't even know what to say. Like, honestly, I don't even know. I'm not sure where to go with it. Do you guys have any particular questions? I don't know.
Well, I just wanted to give you a forum to say to people. I don't think we're even asking you to explain yourself or why that is, because that would be defending yourself and giving into being bullied into something one way or another. But I think just the question would be, what do you want to say to the shade? What do you want to say to people who are trying to nudge you in that direction?
I mean, I was going to be like, mind your business, mind your own business. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what? I look at it and I'm just like, what?
Do you even want to answer this question, Imani? Do you think it's worth answering?
I don't know if, because it's so unclear in my mind, I don't even know. Do you know what I mean? Like, the other answers, I just know, but this one is. Maybe, you never know, maybe we do a whole podcast about it next year, and then we can have part two. You never know.
Okay.
I have a question about the worth topic that you mentioned in regards to not measuring your worth based on how many people are watching your videos and commenting and liking. So what do you use as a measure of your worth, or what measures do you have in place to kind of help you stay grounded?
Yeah, like, how do you measure your worth, right? That's the ultimate question. That's the thing. I can't. I mean, that's a really good question. And I don't know, you know, I really don't know, because I thought that's what the Day of Judgment was about. When God measures your worth, he's like, okay, you didn't do this right, or you did do. But I do know what not to measure my worth by. That's clear. This isn't just about YouTubers. This is for anybody who's posting on social media regularly.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be about your work. I know people who worry about how many likes they're going to get for their picture. This is just what everybody's feeling. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a cultural thing. And that's why I'm talking about it, because it's just so common. It's a fear that we all are experiencing. And so I know what not to measure my worth by. So that's clear in my mind. And I know when I lose myself as well. And that's if I'm not praying, or if I'm working too much, if I'm not going to the mosque, if I'm not coaching myself and working on myself.
How do you measure your worth? Those are the times that you start to go down into that rabbit hole.
Yes.
You're not doing these self-care things. Okay.
Yes.
And what are a few things that you know not to measure your worth by? Your YouTube numbers was one. Anything else you can share?
That's the main one for me right now. That is 100% the main one for me.
Why that one? Because you're working so hard on it, and it.
Yes, because because it's like that's where all my effort is.
Okay, we're going to get into some of the final questions. Hannah, do you have anything before we step into that?
Sure. So we did touch on this, I think, a little bit here and there throughout the entire interview, but I would like to ask, Imani, what's your favorite part of your job, and what's the most challenging part for you?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. What I don't like is probably the loneliness, even though I work with my sister, but we do work separately because we work on two different things. So just the content, I have to sit there for hours by myself. you know, like I said, it takes at least 15 hours to make one video. So I'm going through the books, the information, and just feel alone, you know? Yeah. Why are you trying to figure that out? Why memorizing the content? And so that I don't babble, but then I'm not looking at the paper, you know? And so it's a lot of loneliness sitting there by yourself, trying to figure out content. And what I like about it is just the uncertainty of not knowing where it's going, what I'm going to learn, what I'm going to discover. Like I discovered, I think it was yesterday, this is like a biography for me. I didn't even know that. I've noticed that every topic that I pick, it's something going on with me personally, and that's why I picked it. The first five videos were how not to care what people think, is because I had to figure out how not to care what people think in order to be like, I got to do this video, you know, do this YouTube thing.
Oh, that's so interesting. It's such a reflection of where you're at in your life.
Yeah, it's always a reflection of where I'm at most of the time. And I didn't know that. And so what I do is understand it for my own life, and then I just make an academic video for YouTube and try to figure it out personally on the side. That's been the best thing, like just to, you know, because that's the only thing I'm responsible for, is to, at the end of the day, to help myself. Yeah. So that's the best thing about it. I feel like I'm doing the work that, yeah, I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, that's so true, Imani. I can definitely relate to that. I think anytime you're putting content out, like me with my blog, if you're writing about something that is directly related to you, you do a much better job. You just make much more sense. You connect with people in a new way because it's something that you can relate to, you've experienced. So you just speak about it in a different
way. You can feel it. You feel it, right? You feel it. It's more sincere. It comes from the heart.
Exactly.
So that's actually my, what's the word I'm looking for? Is it radar? No, not radar. You know, when you, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I know that's a topic that I need to talk about.
That's your litmus test?
That's my litmus test. There you go. Okay. If it's not personal, then it's not interesting enough for me to write about.
All right, final questions. What is one fear that felt gripping and overwhelming once upon a time, but that you've overcome it? And in order to overcome it, what truth or truths have you had to hold on to get to getting out of your low point? So we talked about the YouTube. Think about something else.
Yeah, I was going to say that. What is one fear?
Yeah.
Probably confronting people that are close to me in my own family. You know, and I'm like, oh, should I tell? So I tell them, like, my husband, should I tell him that I'm worried about this? Should I not? You know, and then I tell him anyway, but I say it in such a rude, you know what I mean? Like, but it's not like I'm going to hold it back. I don't. I usually end up losing, you know what I mean? Losing perspective and shouting and stuff. But yeah, so conflict. I fear conflict. But then when I actually do sort of get my words together and I think about it, and it always helps having a coach. So you sort of, we clean it up. You clean it up with your coach. That's actually the job of the coach. You clean it up with the coach, and then you go to the person, and then you tell them, hey, this is what I'm worried about. And sometimes it doesn't work out, but sometimes it does. Sometimes if the person is sincere and they're also trying to grow and maintain that relationship with you, they hear you out. And sometimes if they're just interested in being right, or, you know, not hearing anything negative about them, you know, they're too insecure, whatever it may be, it doesn't work out. But you know, you can speed up the relationships when you go into conflict, is what I've learned.
Speed it up, or you can split them up.
You can speed it up. Like, is it going to make or break?
Yeah, that is a good litmus test too.
Yeah.
Can you handle the truth?
Can you handle the truth? Can I handle the truth when it comes back at me too? Because it's not like, because whenever you tell someone the truth, there's a lot of truth they're going to tell you. They got a lot to say too.
That's
a scary litmus test.
Exactly.
All right, are we ready for the final question?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Okay, so Janie Imani, what's one way you'd like to show up to life more boldly these days?
by talking about things that I'm scared to talk about in my YouTube channel, the things that I know that other people will throw shade at me for, will give me negative comments for, and just still doing it anyway. Like, there are people that have started watching my YouTube channel that, like, you know, my parents' generation and my aunts and uncles who probably wasn't really into psychology. And then I worry that, hey, now that I've got their attention, if I talk about a topic that they really, you know, they really disagree with, am I going to get backlash? And so what I do is I respect that I have that fear. If there is backlash, if it's important and it needs to be said, then I need to make a video about it.
Is there a topic that you have in mind now that you're
yes.
not...
Feminism and misogyny.
Yes.
You know, misogyny in our culture, in our Desi culture. And I've been collecting information about that for like the last week, and it's just not coming together. You can hold me accountable for that misogyny video. I think I was scared to call myself a feminist is what I recognized a couple of years back. Like, And now I'm uncovering that, like, why am I afraid of being called a feminist? Because it comes with being angry. It comes with being unattractive, unlikable, you know. But it's, the world is so unfair to women that you just have to shout it out. There is no other way that we can get people to hear us or even understand what's going on unless we're angry first. Somebody said something really interesting to me the other day, and they said, if anger is the first stage of grief, then anger is also the first stage of feminism. We have to get angry. You have to be pissed off first before you can try to help yourself and help people around you, because what's going on is so unfair. It's so wrong. And it's impacting the women in our community every day, and we don't even know it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Imani. Our time is up. We really appreciate you being here. We're going to have you on more.
I hope so.
Definitely.
I hope so. I really enjoyed this. So, yeah, definitely.
Thank you to everybody who's listening right now also. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you have any questions that you'd like to have us answer with Imani in a future episode, let us know, because we definitely will have her back soon.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
You made it to the end. Thanks so much for listening.
Don't forget to subscribe, and you can find us at boldtruelife.com/podcast or your podcast player of choice, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google.
We would love to hear your thoughts on today's conversation.
If you like what you hear, please take 2 minutes of your precious time to rate and review.
It really helps us out. Thanks.